You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
It is the Palpably Unfair Podcast, episode 12, part of the SB Nation NFL show. I am your host, Michael Kist, joined as always by the incomparable Kyle Posey. Kyle, happy early Thanksgiving, brother. How you doing?
Doing great, man. Looking forward to this meal coming up. How's life for you?
It's pretty good. It's a nice, the end of the week is going to be nice and chill. We're going to watch some football on Thursday. By the way, there is going to be a show in the feed. It's not going to be the fantasy show as usual here at the SB Nation NFL show. RJ Ochoa and Brandon Lee Gauten are going to record a special episode at the end of the Thursday game. So you're going to get a special treat here at the SB Nation NFL show. Look forward to that. And let's set the table here for what we're going to do today. Today we are going to be breaking down the top three quarterback performances of Week 11 action like we do every week. Is Deshaun Watson on it? Is it Justin Herbert? Maybe Taysom Hill gets a nod. Who knows? I'm just making it up as we go along. Never watched a second of film in my life, to be honest. Then we're going to talk to Arrowhead Pride's defensive guru, Craig Stout, about what the Las Vegas Raiders are exposing regarding the flaws in the Kansas City Chiefs defense. In-depth discussion. I thought it was a fantastic segment with Craig. He was cracking eggs and knowledge like a true pro. Of course, we have to get into some defensive MVPs of the week. That is Kyle's forte. He is going to give you either one player or one unit from the trenches, the second level and the secondary, and talk about how they stole his heart or disappointed him. Actually, sometimes that happens in Week 11. I've also got some great ideas on how to save football or at least make the viewing experience more enjoyable. And if you enjoy this show and the rest of our family here at the SB Nation NFL show, all we ask is for a literal minute of your time. Drop by Apple Podcasts, leave a 5-star rating and written review. Tell us what you love. Say you're following directions. I don't care. Whatever you like. Just get involved. Get it done. We appreciate the doggone heck out of it. All right. Before we get to the top quarterbacks of the week, Kyle, man, I got to tell you, I took a quick scroll through your timeline at KP_show. Go follow my dude. And there's not a single Thanksgiving Day food take on there. Is that accurate? Are you the last man alive without a food take this week?
I have all of the food takes. I'm just saving them for a time where nobody else is on the TL so I can get these takes off and not be bullied.
So what's your take on, do you have turkey for Thanksgiving?
So my family, we're going to change it up this year for the first time. We're going to try more of a Mexican Thanksgiving. We're just going to have all Mexican dishes. We're going to see how that works. So we put together a little game plan on last Friday, and we've been getting to work a little bit, but it's going to be interesting. I think it's going to work out well though.
What's the main course of that? What's like the turkey version of Mexico? Because that sounds amazing to me.
We're going to have a couple different types of enchiladas. Ooh. As we read about, you know, the dry turkey and like how people feel about their different meats, we are going to have some very good food on Thursday. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, enchiladas. I love it. I'm all about that. And I'm all about my number one quarterback performance of the week. Let's get into the top three performances here on the Palpably Unfair podcast. I'm going to go with Derek Carr of the Las Vegas Raiders. I thought he had the best performance of any quarterback in week 11. This might be the only one, or at least one of the few on this list that arrives here with a loss, but this really was a performance for the ages for the guy. This is a totally different quarterback than we're used to seeing. He was aggressive pushing the ball downfield. He was great outside of structure, accurate to all levels of the field. Now, we talked about this on Monday Football Monday when we broke down this game. And as we mentioned in the top, we also are going to talk more about this game with our brilliant special guest, Craig Stout of Arrowhead Pride. But quickly on the stats here, 23 for 31, 275 yards, 3 touchdowns, 1 interception, which was a prayer in the final seconds. He dealt with some key drops from Ingold and Aguilar and so forth. Nothing too bombastic in the stat line, but they left a lot of meat on the bone there. So this is where I kind of defer to the film. I mean, just go watch it if you don't believe me. He was excellent, but he was also playing against Patrick Mahomes, who also might be good. Kyle, we talked about this back in week 5. Why can't we have this version of Derek Carr every week. Why is it only against the Chiefs? Because I'm not crazy, right? This was a really amazing quarterback performance, right?
He played out of his mind. There's no doubt about it. And maybe he needs a guy like Mahomes on the other sideline to bring that out of him. Maybe he needs somebody to challenge him, because even some of his incompletions, they should have been completions. He was on the money all game. And I mean, it's unfortunate that they didn't get the win, but just looking at what he did on the field, just going from side to side, read to read, putting the ball accurate, not panicking under pressure, which has been, you know, a critique for Carr. So he kind of put it all together this game, and it was really good to see him play at this level.
I want to see him do that more often, because I think the Raiders can be a legit, like, team in the playoffs if he can do that. John Gruden really coaching his butt off. I also think this means that I'm obligated, at the very least, to put Patrick Mahomes at least right behind him. Maybe it's a 1A, 1B situation here on my top three quarterback performances. So I'll just go right into my number two, good old Patty. 34 for 45, 348 yards, two touchdowns, one interception that was probably DeMarcus Robinson's fault. I know you like these two stats, Kyle. 22 of his throws went for first downs. Most of the week. That means nearly half of his attempts move the chains, not just the completions, the attempts. I'll take that any day of the week, especially on Sundays. Plus 9.8 completion percentage over expectation per Next Gen Stats, third best of the week. Super accurate. You know, overall, the Chiefs did a great job, both in the run game and the pass game, of getting on the flanks, getting to the edges against the Raiders, where they were extremely effective. You saw that on the 3-yard touchdown to Tyreek Hill, where you've got Tyreek Hill coming from the innermost slot from Trips, a.k.a. the number three receiver. At the snap, he sprints behind the formation to the opposite flat. Nobody is able to pick him up and react in time. That's an easy six. The throw I really like from Mahomes, there was a couple, but like the classic, okay, yeah, all right, we get it, man, sure. It's the 19-yard pass to Travis Kelce along the sideline in the middle of the fourth, where he immediately escapes pressure, flushes to his right, starts like this triple clutch animation like he's lagging in Madden while on the move, and fires a bullet to the sideline. Nothing you can do about it. And of course, the final one where he pulls Jonathan Abram out of his zone responsibility to leave Kelce wide open in the end zone. Kyle, like, that was like the easiest 2-minute drill that I've ever seen in my life. And actually, all they needed was a minute and 15 seconds to pull that off. Mahomes is currently the MVP favorite, with Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers lagging behind. Let's go to the decision desk with our expert Kyle Posey. Was this inevitable, Kyle? And should we make a projection right now? Or are there too many decent defenses coming up on the Chiefs' schedule that make it too close to call?
Yeah, the only question here was, how long would it take Mahomes to score in that drive? Because I don't think anybody in the stadium, and probably not even on the Raiders' sideline, figured that game was over. I think we have to call it. Why wouldn't we call it?
Oh, we have an official projection.
Yes. So we're heading into week 12. What is possibly going to change? Like, is he just going to wet the bed the next six games and, you know, not play like the player that we've seen this over the first half of the season? He's been lights out. It's been so ho-hum that we're kind of tired of his greatness. We're kind of bored of the things that he's putting on tape. He continues to play at a high level. He continues to elevate players around him, and he's winning. Like, he's doing so when he's winning. So there's not really much to say about Mahomes other than his greatness. So yeah, let's call it. Let's stop wasting other people's time and let's get on to the next award.
I'm with you, man. I think even though there is some tough defenses on there, I think Mahomes is just Mahomes, and that Chiefs offense is just it's a juggernaut. It's a buzzsaw, man. And they've had like their struggles with teams, but like, remember at this point of the year, last year, they had already accumulated like four losses because Mahomes was kind of banged up and whatnot. You give Mahomes a full healthy year to put together a solid resume, and I think he definitely takes it home. Let's go to my number three performance of the week. And look, this guy isn't going to get any MVP votes, but let me tease it for a sec. He is sixth in completion percentage. He is second in yards per attempt. He is sixth in passer rating, third in adjusted net yards per attempt, which is a stat that I love, unlike passer rating, to be honest. He's doing all this, and he's on a 3-7 team. Kyle, can you guess who it is?
The second best quarterback in the NFL?
Oh, he's back on the train. I already know you know. It's Deshaun Watson, right? On the day against New England, 28 for 37, 9.3 yards per attempt with 344 yards, two touchdowns, no interceptions. The Texans actually managed to win this one. Good for them. Their second W in the last three. Shout out Bill O'Brien. By the way, Watson has not thrown an interception since October 11th. Which was in a blowout of the Jaguars. It didn't even matter. He threw two that game. So it's been a while since my man has had a turnover like that. Forget the film examples here, because I need to know what side of this argument you're on, Kyle. Are you a believer in QB wins as a valid argument in evaluating QB play and QB worth? Like, for instance, this scenario, Deshaun Watson, 3-7. Does it matter to you at all?
No, I mean, if we were to ignore, if you were to watch Houston's offense and you didn't know the outcome of the game, there's no way you would believe that Houston was 3-7. Just because when you see Deshaun Watson play, he's playing like an MVP level. He's playing at that high of a level. But unfortunately, the Texans defense has to take the field. And when that happens, they have zero chance to win. But as far as QB wins, so Jared Goff had a QB win on Monday night. And I know he had great stats, but if you just see that game, he tried to give the game away in the fourth quarter. So that part of me is like, man, he really got a QB win for that. But on the other hand, all these players that we talk about, and like Derek Carr, for example, he deserved to win that game. He played out of his mind, played very well, but he didn't win. So, I mean, there's an argument on both sides. I don't think I'm leaning either way, but I just think that we have to acknowledge, we have to find another way to acknowledge these guys outside of QB wins because, yeah, two of the best quarterbacks this week, Carr and Watson.
Would you say that there are multiple metrics out there or a combination of certain metrics that you would put together that you would value over QB wins? Like if you were to pick an argument, your case wouldn't start with QB wins, right?
Oh, not at all, no. And okay. I think we could come up with probably, 6 to 10 stats before for sure.
All right. I agree with you there. You mentioned Carr. Yeah, absolutely. He deserved to win that game. Sometimes the other team has to just take the field and it's Patrick Mahomes. You mentioned Houston. I mean, they're 32nd in run DVOA. Their defense is 24th in pass DVOA, 31st in rush DVOA. The entire team around him, other than like him and Will Fuller, and I think the offensive line is actually a little bit better than they've been in recent years. I think we can say that's true. So he's not under pressure as much, but like Wilson doesn't have a problem creating on his own when things break down, as we continually see every Sunday. So shout out to him for a fantastic performance. Sad I had to keep off Justin Herbert and whatnot, but normally here we'd get into some dud performances from the week 11 slate. I mean, you don't need me to tell you that Jake Luton was bad, whatever. I don't even know how to pronounce his name. That's how bad he is. Or that Drew Lock really isn't better than Brett Rippon. So let's get to our special guest of the show. And he is going to help us break down what's going on with the Kansas City Chiefs defense, especially when it comes to how the Las Vegas Raiders attack it, the success they found against it. That guest is Craig Stout, defensive connoisseur for the Arrowhead Pride. Let's kick it to that right now. Craig, welcome into the SB Nation NFL show. I am thrilled to have you, man. How you been?
I've been good, man. Thanks for having me on. Really appreciate you coming in here and asking me about the side of the Chiefs that nobody else wants to talk about because everybody just wants to talk about Mahomes. Right. I appreciate you bringing me on to talk about the lesser known side of the Chiefs today.
So I remember meeting Craig in Mobile, Alabama for the Senior Bowl. I think it was me and Mark Schofield, and we met you there. And I think within the first 30 seconds of you talking ball, I was like, oh, this guy is on another level with the defensive talk. He really knows Spags. Like, he's the guy to talk to if you want to talk Chiefs defense. And that's why we're here today. And I reached out to you the other day to solve an itch. And that itch is the question I wondered aloud on Monday Football Monday this week. And that question is, what are the Raiders specifically doing so well against the Chiefs and why? Because they really seem to have figured out how to attack the Chiefs defense. And for a defending Super Bowl champion and current Super Bowl favorite, that matters a great deal in the overall landscape of the NFL, in my opinion. So I had Craig send me some plays, and we're going to discuss those plays on here. And then we're going to get at some overarching themes to talk about the weaknesses of the Chiefs defense, what we think about them. Yes, it does help, gentle listener. If you have NFL Game Pass, you can follow along. I'll shout out the timestamps, but we hope and we aim for this conversation to be accessible in an audio format as well. So, Craig, let's start with the first game between these two. We're going to go back to week 5. It is the second quarter, 11:58, second 5 around midfield. This is going to be a 59-yard touchdown to Nelson Aguilar, a player near and dear to my heart for various reasons. Walk us through why this ended up with Aguilar streaking away from the Honey Badger, Tyrann Mathieu here.
Well, Steve Spagnuolo decided in the Week 5 matchup to play Derek Carr much the same way that the Chiefs have played him in previous years, you know, taking away everything short. I think everybody kind of knows that Derek Carr loves to live in the short to intermediate range, and they like to run the ball. So he just stacked the box with a safety. He would play a lot of single high looks and relied on his cornerbacks to kind of sit out there a little bit wider. He had his deep safety kind of buzz into the hole, cut a drag route that came across the middle with Aguilar running a post over the top there. The Chiefs sent a blitz. The Raiders offensive line did a fantastic job picking it up. I think as anybody who watched Sunday Night Football noticed, the Raiders offensive line is playing at a very high level, picking everything up right now. They were able to pick it up. Derek Carr breaks tendencies, looks deep, and Tyrann Mathieu can't get over the top, and Charvarius Ward can't bail deep enough on the deep third there in a cover three zone. Aguilar is able to hit the seam in between those two guys, and they're able to create a big touchdown play there that goes against the Raiders' tendency. Steve Spagnuolo really focused on stacking the box, taking away Waller over the middle, taking away Renfro over the middle, you know, just kind of taking away Derek Carr's comfort zone and the run. And Derek Carr was able to break out of that. So kudos to him. Kudos to Gruden for kind of coming out of their shell a little bit more. They certainly haven't done that against any other teams but the Chiefs this year. But it is open for that type of team.
Yeah, this is a really nice play. And I agree with you. As far as the short to intermediate stuff with Carr, I've talked about it a bunch. I mean, that's what we expect. When he makes that nice little move in the pocket to his left, if you had not known what this play was going to be, I would automatically tell you, yeah, he's probably going to throw this crosser and they're cutting it and like they're all over it. But he gets a block pickup from his running back here who does everything in his power to just slide in front of this guy. Very interesting technique on the block by 23 there. You got to see this on Game Pass, not the listener, but just trust me, it's wild. But Carr just throws in a beauty. So let's go to the very next drive after the Chiefs answer back with a touchdown drive of their own. This is kind of why the Raiders have to do this, right? You're in a boat race with Patrick Mahomes. The Raiders get yet another explosive. Still in the second quarter, 9:04. It's first and 10, and this is the first play of the drive. And man, they really dialed in calling back-to-back explosives here. Now, this is a run by Devontae Booker. This goes for 43 yards to the right side. Now, the Chiefs defense ranks 30th in run defense DVOA. And Craig, this play, I think, illustrates some of those issues, right?
Absolutely, it does. The Chiefs defense is very poor against the run, particularly out of their nickel defense. They don't do a good job of staying gap sound. It's one of the things that you kind of live and die with a guy like Chris Jones on the field. He's an absolutely excellent pass rusher, but this play here, you can kind of see him get blown off the ball a little bit. It allows the right tackle to climb to the dime linebacker Ben Neiman, who is blocked out of the play by his butt. Basically, the tackle kind of turns and throws his rear into the block, and Devontae Booker, because the Chiefs, after being torched deep a couple of times, rotate to some split safety look. So that means that they don't have that extra guy in the box. All of a sudden, Booker is able to hit the hole at speed. Dan Sorensen comes up, tries to make a tackle, misses the tackle. Another thing that anybody watching the Chiefs defense should be very familiar with. And Booker's able to rip off a huge run here without much effort. I mean, he's not really touched, doesn't really require him to make a big hard cut. It's just good blocking, a little bit not gap sound by the Chiefs defense, and having to play those split safety looks because they don't trust their cornerbacks on an island that often.
Yeah, I mean, you've got two safeties 15 yards off the ball when the ball is snapped. And yeah, you're going to have some issues with run fits if you're not gap sound. And we're going to talk about the run game some more, but let's fast forward to the second meeting. Very beginning of the game. So we're still in the initial scripted phase for the Raiders offense. It's quarter one. 13:43. It's 3rd and 5 on the Raiders' 30-yard line. This is going to end up being a 26-yard pass to the very talented Darren Waller. This one is all about matchups, and the Raiders did a number on the Chiefs creating those here, Craig.
Yes, John Gruden had his A game. He had him going in both of these games, and this is a prime example of it. He motions Waller across the formation. Dan Sorensen follows him across the formation. They get into a bunch of condensed trips onto the left-hand side to the field. Got plenty of space there. They have the point man run a drag. Ruggs sells a vertical release. And once again, the Chiefs are in cover three. They're not cover three. It's a cover one. I'm so sorry. Daniel Sorensen ends up matched up against Darren Waller on this wheel route up the boundary. And Tyrann Mathieu, because of the Aguilar vertical release on the backside and because Ruggs selling the vertical release from the slot, he can't get over to the boundary quickly enough because he has to respect those, you know, those two routes. Darren Waller ends up one-on-one against Dan Sorensen. And I don't care who you are. Darren Waller is a monster to try and cover. Dan Sorensen doesn't have great straight line speed as it is. And so he just gets torched by Waller. This happened time and time again. Gruden was able to dial up these looks because the Chiefs were trying to play so much man defense and blitz and try and get so much pressure on Carr that they couldn't get with just four rushers. It ends up a lot of times with the Chiefs in man coverage, Waller on a guy that frankly couldn't cover him because the Chiefs don't really have a guy that's very good at covering an elite size and speed guy like that, just like, you know, most teams in the NFL don't.
Yeah, and you see there's a whole defender in the middle. They're really covering up that short to intermediate range of the middle of the field, as you kind of alluded to earlier. And I mean, look, watching Carr, like, yeah, that's what you expect unless he plays the Chiefs, which is really hard to explain. I mean, I've been saying the first time it happened, I told my co-host there at Monday Football Monday and your coworker there over at Arrowhead Pride, why can't we see this kind of Carr all the time? Because that's really exciting. Like, how much different for you? And I know you scout these opponents big time in these offenses big time. How much different was Carr in these two games than what you normally see from him?
Derek Carr against the Chiefs is what his brother thinks he is 100% of the time. Right. That's what it is. His brother thinks he's this legit MVP candidate, best quarterback in the league, you know, that level of player. When he has come up against the Chiefs this year, that's been what it is. John Gruden and he are on the same level. Those weapons are elite. And Derek Carr is just so out of what he has done literally every other game this year. Like, they didn't get out the deep passing game at all before they played the Chiefs in week 5. And then they put it away again until they met up with the Chiefs here in week 11. It's a big tendency breaker. You can obviously tell that John Gruden was very focused on beating the Chiefs. He really wanted to beat his buddy Andy Reid. He's really trying to push to win the division. And rightfully so. I mean, these are the defending Super Bowl champions. You want to put on for the best that you can possibly play against. Derek Carr was fantastic. And frankly, if his receivers would have caught some passes there late in the game, this is probably another loss for the Chiefs. Chiefs defense got bailed out by a deep Ruggs pass that was dropped and a couple of Alec Ingold passes that were dropped as well. Just big crucial plays. He was outstanding this week.
Yeah, so there were other shot plays that they left on the table, and they still, you know, were very competitive in this game. And looking beyond just the Raiders and looking at where other teams have exposed some of these flaws on the defense for the Chiefs, you mentioned to me when we were kind of plotting this out that Teddy Bridgewater of the Panthers and Christian McCaffrey for the Chargers, Justin Herbert and Austin Eckler, they've all had their success due to similar reasons to the issues that we kind of outlined here. Can you explain what you meant by that?
When you have an effective short passing game, it just really changes what Steve Spagnuolo can do. Steve Spagnuolo blitzes almost 38% of the time. He's a very aggressive defensive coordinator. He really wants to send those extra guys. And when you have guys like Bridgewater, Justin Herbert, when the Chiefs played against him at the drop of a hat, and then Derek Carr, who can get the ball out quickly, it reduces the amount of time that Spagnuolo can dial up some of these loops, some of these, you know, stunts, some of these blitzes, everything that they typically like to do to get guys into space. It just takes those off the table. So they have to win with four. And the Chiefs don't have guys. I mean, they've got Chris Jones. He's an outstanding football player, but they can double him. Frank Clark, you can chip him. And the other two guys on the field haven't produced at a high enough level to where you can, you know, reliably have them win one-on-one blocks. So these teams that have quick passing games and heavy rushing attacks basically take the Chiefs off their game entirely and put it on the linebackers to do their job. And that's the weakest spot in the Chiefs defense right now. Their linebacking core is pretty poor. They've got an ultra athletic guy that's a rookie, Willie Gay Jr., guy that doesn't know the playbook yet, can't get on the field in some of these nickel positions. So they really kind of are sitting ducks for a lot of these teams. And Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers coming up next week, that's going to be another situation where you can have a Brady-led offense that wants to get the ball out quickly, a nice, strong power run game. This could be another really, really tough matchup for the Chiefs defense. Saints coming up for the Chiefs as well. There's a couple teams here coming up on the Chiefs schedule that are going to have to cause Patrick Mahomes to play out of his mind again. And luckily he can do that. But I think that if you see an improvement over the Chiefs for the Chiefs defense over the next 3 or 4 weeks, I think you can start to think that they could really go on a deep, deep, deep run here again.
because of the way those offenses match up. I agree with you. That's a very good point. And what can the Chiefs, not necessarily to fix it, but what can they do to mitigate these issues, right? Like, the car might be on its last legs, but if I can just fix this one major mechanical issue, it'll get me through the month type of deal. Like, is there a fix like that, or is it more about talent and just not having the horses right now?
I think they got to play a little bit more press. Getting L'Jarius Sneed back this week was nice, but they played him exclusively in the slot. He was a boundary guy early for the Chiefs while Bashaud Breeland was out, and he was frankly outstanding on the boundary. I'm not sure if they're just easing him in or if they plan to really just play him in the slot from here on out. But Charvarius Ward and L'Jarius Sneed being these press boundary guys allows Steve Spagnuolo to do a little bit more, to, you know, blitz a little bit heavier, knowing that some of those timing routes are be off, takes the short passing game away a little bit. And then Chris Jones, frankly, just has to be better on the interior. Frank Clark also has to be better. But Chris Jones, against that short passing game, getting his hands up, getting instant pressure, that's where they're really going to win. That's, he can be the X factor basically for this defense down the stretch.
Man, I really, really enjoyed this talk. I'm going to have you on BGN and all the other stuff that I do, man. This is excellent. This is really fun. I knew this was going to be awesome, but you crushed it, brother. So let the gentle listener know where they can find you, all your work, plug everything, man. Go for it.
Well, I'm over at Arrowhead Pride. I'm the defensive film analyst over there at arrowheadpride.com. Also, I've taken up my bit this year is special teams analysis. Ooh. I'm not particularly good at it, but I'm whole hog into special teams analysis now. But you can find me at Barley Hop on Twitter, and come follow me, you know, check my stuff out. I try and do breakdowns 2-3 times a week and really just try and put as much content out there. And then the Arrowhead Pride Laboratory podcast on the Arrowhead Pride Podcast Network. That's our pride and joy. That's where we really kind of get down. Me and my buddy Kent Swanson and my other buddy Matt Lane get to sit down and really break down some X's and O's for the Chiefs.
And we'll be back to talk about our defensive MVPs and some ideas to improve your football viewing experience right after this.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
We are back here on the Palpably Unfair podcast, episode 12. The SB Nation NFL show is bringing it to you. Michael Kist here with Kyle Posey. Kyle, it is that time for you to shine. Every week, you give your three defensive performances of the week from different levels of the field. You changed it up a bit this week, but it's not on the defensive line. You did find somebody in the trenches that you really liked. Tell me who stole your heart in the trenches in week 11.
So on Sunday morning, one of the Broncos guys I follow quote tweeted a fan, and he was saying how Bradley Chubb was overrated and it wasn't worth the draft pick and this and that. So naturally, Chubb went out and had an amazing game because that's how this works. And it doesn't hurt that he went against, air quotes, Austin Jackson, first rounder. Right. That's not Chubb's fault. You can't blame him for who he's going to. On the first play of the game, Chubb beat Jackson with his little inside counter arm over. And that forced completion from Tua. Two plays later, Chubb bull rushes Jackson. Tua has to step up, rush his play again, throws another completion. And that's pretty much how the game went all afternoon. between Jackson and Chubb and the Dolphins right tackle as well. And young QBs, they really tend to struggle when they see color flash. And on Draymond Jones' sack, Chubb did that again where he flashed around the end, forced Tua to panic, dropped his eyes, stepped up, had a sack. The same happened with Malik Reed later in the first half where Chubb just, he didn't really have a sack until the fourth quarter, and that came on a stunt, but he found a way to affect the game without really getting a hand on Tua, and that's why he is on the list. PFF credited Chubb for a whopping 11 pressures, which, I mean, it felt right because it seemed like Chubb had real estate in Miami's backfield all game, and it was a really impressive performance, and he was all over.
So were you the one that, were you the one in the mention saying that Chubb was overrated? Number one, I don't disagree with you. I don't think he's been very good. Like, for instance, you mentioned those 11 pressures, and those 11 pressures are as much as he had combined from week 6 to week 10. That's over a span of 5 games for the Broncos. Woo. So he was on a real dry spell. Before that, like back in week 4, he had 10 pressures, but the 3 games to start the season, he wasn't real impactful. Like this game right here against Miami was by far the most impactful that he has been all season. And I don't think he had a very good 2019. I know he was banged up and he was injured as well, but I think overall he is definitely disappointed, but you are seeing like what he can be, essentially, right?
Absolutely. And I wonder how much of this is related to him just maybe not being a one, quote unquote, and Von Miller that takes a lot of pressure off a lot of players. So maybe he's just a really good number two. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But considering where he was taken and, you know, the contract that he's probably going to command, you're going to want to see. And obviously, you're not going to have like 10 hurries a game, but you're going to want to see more consistent play from Chubb moving forward.
Yeah, that's a good point about, you know, sometimes you can be a really good number two, but you need that one guy taking all the chips, taking all the attention, taking all the slides to kind of get that pressure off of you and allow you to get one-on-one on an island. Let's go. Well, actually, we're not going to go to linebackers because you didn't like any. Look, here's the thing. I think the same thing for running backs is true for linebackers. Unless you're elite, it really doesn't matter, or unless you're a really good cover guy, right? Really good cover linebackers are really valuable to me, passing league, nickel defenses, all that stuff. But you didn't see anything you liked in linebackers, but you did see a couple of guys that I also saw that balled out this week. On the defensive side of the ball, let's start with a guy with a nickname that I love. Let's go with Jackrabbit. Tell me about him.
Amazing nickname. Yeah. And I'm always on the side of guys who compete. And on Sunday, that was Janoris Jenkins. Jenkins was targeted 10 times against the Falcons, and he only allowed 4 catches. He had an interception. He had a couple pass breakups. When Matt Ryan threw his way, Jenkins allowed a 27.1 passer rating. He gave up 46 yards on a post early in the game. And that was against a post where he just slipped. He fell. He can't really, can't really control that. And Jenkins was doing it against Julio Jones. He was doing against Calvin Ridley, and that's kind of why he got the nod over a guy that we're going to talk about here in a second, just because of competition. But he could have had another interception. He could have a third interception if he could catch, but that's why he's on the defensive side of the ball. I just think he deserves credit for just taking Matt Ryan's primary read away. He did it on a couple of sacks, and he was just playing trail technique. He was winning against routes all over the field. And yeah, I mean, the nickname Jackrabbit, easily top 5, and he deserved it, man. He was just balling out this game. I'm glad to see he was getting in throwing lanes and just disrupting the Falcons passing game all afternoon.
Janoris Jenkins is like one of the most consistent okay players at cornerback. Like that, like honestly, like the guy makes, number one, he makes a ton of plays on the ball because he's super aggressive. That also gets him burnt. So he gives up touchdowns, but he also gives you ball production. I remember he was about to be a free agent. All the Eagles fans were like, oh, he's overrated and blah, blah, blah. No, I think he's properly rated.
Yeah.
I don't think he's a bum or anything like that, man. I think that's a pretty doggone good quarterback. But let's go to a guy so I had this discussion on the Kiss and Solak show on Bleeding Green Nation with my co-host Benjamin Solak. And I mentioned that I thought Jesse Bates was the best safety in the league this year. However, he brought up a name, and this was a guy I watched back in the offseason I was really impressed by, and I got to watch more of him this season. He brought up a name I really have a hard time arguing with, and then he really made his case for the Broncos. Who is it? Who's the safety?
Yeah, Justin Simmons. He's been franchise tagged, and he's probably going to walk this offseason, and he's not going to be disappointed when he gets that new contract. And games like he had Sunday against Tua and against the Dolphins are the reason why. So Simmons had an interception. He could have had another one too, but I love his aggressiveness. Speaking of aggressiveness in DBs, he's always coming downhill, man. And he's flying. Yeah. He's getting great reads. Him and Jesse Bates are also a lot alike in that sense where, you know, they're taking chances and they're gambling. And I have no problem with that because they make so many plays. And yeah, they're going to give up. They're going to, you know, leave their cornerbacks hanging out to dry every now and then. But there are so many plays that they make up for it where, you know, it's just hard to fault them for that. So Sunday, Simmons was targeted 6 times. He only allowed 5 receptions, or he allowed 5 receptions, but for only 46 yards. I mentioned the interception. And it, like I said, one of those plays, like, he gave up a 25-yarder, so that's going to happen. But he also had 3 stops against the run. He's making plays around the line of scrimmage. Man, he's just such a playmaker. And there's not many of those at safety in the NFL. And I think we have to acknowledge this type of player that Simmons is, because he's one of the better safeties in the NFL, and that's been the case for a couple of years now. So I'm interested to see, you know, this offseason if he walks in the kind of deal that he commands.
Yeah, I remember watching him because we didn't know if they were going to tag him or if they were going to re-sign him. I was pretty sure that they were going to re-sign him, but it's kind of going through that safety class, you know, Anthony Harris, guys like that, where we didn't know what was going to happen. And man, Justin Simmons, it was like, pay this man everything you can to keep him in the building. Denver should. And I know you really shouldn't pay safeties like that, but I would pay Justin Simmons like that all day, every day. All right. So those are our 3 defensive MVPs for the week, brought to you by Kyle Posey. I want to get into a couple thoughts before we get out of here and start prepping for Thanksgiving here. I had a couple ideas, and I wanted to pass them by you, Kyle, and see what you thought. To improve the viewer experience of watching NFL football, my number one idea, and I kind of stole it, Nate Tice put this on the timeline. I think he was watching like MLS soccer or something to that effect, but it was on ESPN. And it was cool because, you know, like in FIFA, you have that heads up display and you've got like the dots of where all your players are. So you can kind of see, you know, what's happening elsewhere outside of your main screen. What if we had that for football? Like we already have the next gen dots, so they have the capability to do it. But if we had a little heads up display on like the bottom right hand or wherever, where you can actually see what's happening with the safeties, with the routes, like if they aren't going to change the camera angle, can they at least give me a little bit more information? Do you agree with that? Do you think that'd be good for football?
I think it'd be great because there is a good chunk of people that want to see different parts of the game. And you know, as we continue to get further and further along, people are going to want some innovation. And that is a perfect idea. And that's why not at least tease it, try it out for like a season or a couple of games or, you know, however long it takes. But I love that idea, man. I think it gives somebody, just people, something else to look forward to when they're watching the football game on Sunday.
I think there's going to be 1,000 people like doing the whole get rid of the ball. And like then you actually show them the dots and there's like nobody open. Or it's going to really put the battery in the back of the people that want to be like, you got a guy wide open. But like, you know, he's not even looking that way. The play's not designed that way. But there's like a random dot way over here that's wide open. But either way, I mean, I want to see that stuff. I want to see routes develop. I'm a wide receiver guy. I know you love defensive back play. I think that would be a boon for us. My number two idea, and I got this idea from Jalen Ramsey and Mike Evans, Bucks and Rams going at it in a great game. Look, cornerbacks and wide receivers, there should be at least one pairing a game that can go to the ref and they can make a mutual agreement that there are going to be no flags called during the route, because Jalen Ramsey and Mike Evans were interfering with each other on literally every single play. They should be able to go to tell the ref, whatever happens down here, no matter how bad it gets, just stay out of it, man. Keep the flags in your pocket. Let us fight it out like two brothers in the backyard. Obviously not actual fighting, like you draw the line at punches and the like, but if it's not worthy of an ejection, it's green light. Because honestly, I can't tell, especially in that matchup, who was interfering with whom on any given play. So do you agree, Kyle, that two guys should be able to say, let us play, keep it in your pocket? I think that'd be a lot more fun.
That would be hilarious and great for us, especially because just imagine you're able to designate one player on each team. So the Browns are playing the Steelers, Wyatt Teller and the Steelers defensive line. Like, all right, here's what we're going to do. There's no holding. This is an octagon. You two get after it. Like that is
the answer to the face.
Yeah. Let's do it.
Eye gouging, all types of stuff. I like that for the trenches too. That would be wild. That'd be some old school football right there. But look, I'm always a fan of just letting them play anyway. Like, I hate the ticky-tack pass interference calls. I hate the spot fouls especially. And I think that would be a nice way to limit it while also giving us some fantastic entertainment. All right. That is going to do it for the Palpably Unfair podcast. episode 12. Kyle, any last words for the gentle listeners before we hit the old dusty turkey trail?
I got nothing. Enjoy that Thanksgiving meal, everybody.
It's a really, really hot Thanksgiving Day food take. I was hoping you were going to bust one out at the end, man. But I'm looking forward to Mexican.
Yep, I'm waiting for it. Maybe tonight at like 9 p.m. so nobody sees it.
I'm retweeting the heck out of it. All right, we'll get out of here. I've been Michael Kist. That has been Kyle Posey, the Palpably Unfair podcast on the SB Nation NFL show. We appreciate you dropping by. Make sure you leave that 5-star rating in Apple Podcasts, written review, all that good stuff. But most importantly, enjoy your Thanksgiving Day. Enjoy the family. Go dominate and hide yourselves today.
Support for this show comes from Vanta. Dealing with loads of spreadsheets, juggling different tools, and having to do manual security checks, it can be a headache to keep up with today's compliance and security programs. Vanta is the trust management platform that wants to simplify things and bring all your trust-building efforts under one roof, making growth smoother for your whole organization. Vanta lets you automate up to 90% of compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, HIPAA, and more. Strengthen security posture and reduce third-party risk. Get $1,000 off Vanta when you go to vanta.com/vox. That's vanta.com/vox for $1,000 off Vanta.
Support for this podcast came from SAS. Data is everything. And now everything is data, which means more to process, more to analyze. And now more than ever, speed to answers matters. So how do you produce those answers as fast as the world produces data? With SAS Viya, the quickest way from a billion points of data to a point of view. It's a more productive data and AI platform that helps you get more done. Learn more today at sas.com/VIYA.